there, friends. Welcome to ExoLore, the show that helps you imagine other worlds with facts and science. I am your host, Dr. Moya McTeer. I'm an astrophysicist who studied pretty much everything in space, from planetary orbits to the radiation left over from the Big Bang to star formation and black holes and galaxy evolution. But I am especially interested in the motion of stars and how that affects the habitability of exoplanets, which are planets outside of our solar system. I am also a folklorist who specializes in building and analyzing fictional worlds, and this podcast is my way of sharing those worlds and that knowledge with you. So let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of ExoLore. Today, we're talking to Mallory Cooper, who's a New York Times bestselling author and creator of the Aeon 14 universe, which now includes over 100 books spanning, is it 6,000 years?
Well, 7,000 years.
7,000 years? Oh, my God. You sound amazing. Thank you for being here on the show. I was really happy when you reached out. Your email was full of nerdy sci-fi greatness. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Do you want to introduce yourself in your own words? What do you do? Who are you?
Sure. Yeah. So as if my name's Mallory Cooper. I write under MD Cooper is how you'll find me online. And yeah, I created a universe called Aeon 14, which I sort of think of as like a future history. It's how I envision humanity and other species from Earth spreading out through the galaxy and sort of the conflicts that we would have and stuff like that. And I also wrote it in a way to be a hopeful future, a future where we don't destroy ourselves, where we're not perfect either, but we kind of figure out how to muddle along. I really love hopeful stories and stories with like a lot of optimism in them. So that's part of why I wrote it as well. And also like a sense of adventure. And on top of that, one of the reasons why I was writing Aeon 14 was I wanted to make science fiction that really relied heavily on the science, but still told a good story where everything was all science backed and based and founded in good science. But I didn't bombard the reader with it. It was just like, here's all these terms. And if you happen to know what these terms are, this is going to be really an extra layer of richness for you. And if you don't, it won't detract from the story. I've accomplished much of that, actually.
I agree. So I read Destiny Lost, which is one of the books in the Orion Wars series. And there were so many terms in there that felt familiar to me, but also a lot that didn't. And I love that you included a little appendix of all of the terms and like a history of the world. You made it very easy to get into from any starting point, I think.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. That was my goal. So I'm glad I succeeded.
Yeah, you can check that off. You did it well. I always ask my guests before we get into the episode what fictional worlds you've been inhabiting lately. And I know you build your own, but something else maybe that you've been watching or reading or playing?
Well, I am going through a replay of Mass Effect, the Legendary Edition. I think Mass Effect is the best science fiction trilogy ever made. Books, TV shows, movies, anything. It's for trilogies. You know, I think there might be some longer stories that are better, but they just told such an amazing story across those three games. So that's my science fiction stuff right now. I don't read science fiction that much because I end up accidentally picking up other authors' voices. So I have to be really careful about what I read. But I'm also, because it's October, my wife and I are watching all sorts of horror movies. So we're actually reliving our youth and watching the original Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. And we're watching all the really old ones and stuff like that. And kind of like, because my wife and I both write books. So we're kind of like even looking at them from a storytelling standpoint, like how is it that sometimes with these really terrible special effects and whatnot, were they able to make these movies still really scary? And they really do at times just by how like they avoid showing certain information and stuff like that. They create some pretty scary movies. So it's kind of fun to watch that and see how that's different from what we watch now, where a lot of it's more overt.
Yeah, you can do so much with good suspense building and also a good soundtrack for scary movies.
Yeah, the music really helps a lot.
It really does. I've seen some videos where people show scary movie scenes, but they put like happy music on top of it. So it's not scary anymore.
Oh my God, that would probably ruin so many scenes.
It does. It does. But it's amazing how our brains can take in those different types of context and it just changes the experience for us entirely. Okay. Well, I would love to learn more about you and how you got into writing science fiction. Have you always wanted to be a sci-fi author?
I actually originally wanted to be a fantasy author. When I was younger, I devoured Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Then I read The Silmarillion, and I didn't want these stories to end. So I started writing my own stories, and they were terrible because I started writing, I want to say, when I was like 12. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that had always driven me nuts in fantasy novels was the inaccuracy of the geography.
Ooh.
Where you'd be reading a story and it would take them like 10 days to go one direction and 5 days to come back. You know, have you read the Sword of Shannara by Terry Brooks?
Is that the Shannara Chronicles with the TV show now that's out about it? I haven't read them, but I've seen the show.
So Sword of Shannara was the very first book that he wrote. One of the things that's evident is that the maps that appear in the books now were not in existence when he first wrote the books. And so there's this one period where it takes them quite a while to get to this one fortress. And then Alanon, the druid, in one like frenzied nighttime run, like rides his horse all the way around a mountain range and down to the city. And in the future, it takes them like over a week every single time to do that. But somehow he did it in one day this one time. And it always drove me nuts. I'm like, why doesn't he just, you know, summon warp speed horse and... do this again. Like, this would be really helpful if now Alanon could do that again. And there's also Terry Goodkind, who wrote the Sword of Truth books. And there was a period where they like went walking across the Midlands and there was nothing for a really long time. And then when they came back in the following book, there was like an entire kingdom there that was like one of the biggest kingdoms in the Midlands and stuff like that. And like the last time you wrote about this area, there was nothing here. Mm-hmm. So I've always been kind of particular about that because it breaks the world for me when I'm reading the story. I'm like, you didn't even take the time, author, to like understand your own world well enough to make it internally consistent. So that was a really big thing for me, is I wanted to build like internally consistent stories. So I actually started with the maps first. I built all of the maps and then I looked at them and I thought like, okay, like here's a forest and here's a river. So probably like the closest point between the forest and the river would be some sort of lumber camp, you know, where they're getting everything to move the lumber down the river. And that would, you know, like here's where some low foothills reach the river. You might find some quarries in there, you know, so you might have a town here that has quarries. They might use some of the lumber for things. You know, here's where the grain would be, and you'd have to move the grain to where these other more industrial areas are and stuff like that. And that formed the civilizations that would grow up around that, because like, okay, well, these people are sort of isolated and they have all the resources they need, mm-hmm. you know, or these people don't have, they have all these resources, but like there's another kingdom on the ocean and they would control access to fishing and they might control access to trade beyond this one area. So there might be conflict here, you know, over trade rights and moving goods and stuff like that. And then that allows you to sort of figure out who's going to start to have conflicts with each other based on that. Because really, like most of the conflicts on Earth are created by geography. You know, people pool in certain areas for a variety of reasons, and then other people want access to those things. Like, for example, both of the world wars in the last century were basically Germany wanting more access to the ocean and more access to land. Mm. You know,
I've never heard it framed that way. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, that was like what Hitler's Mein Kampf was all about. It was about Lebensraum, living space for the German people, because they felt hemmed in by all these other peoples around them, and they wanted more access to land. You know, and they didn't have their own empire. Like everybody else had built up an empire. And if you look at like the ways that certain groups have struggled to gain access to ports. Like, for example, the main reason why Russia recently went into the Ukraine and seized control of that one peninsula, and why they fight so hard around Georgia to maintain that land, is because other than St. Petersburg, those are their only two ocean access points on the eastern side of Asia. So if they were to lose Georgia, now they have the Ukraine and vice versa. But before, they didn't have the ports in the Ukraine that they took back, and they were on the brink of losing Georgia, which would make St. Petersburg their only access to the ocean. You know, so much of the conflict that people have and the struggles that they have and why certain groups are oppressed or are trying to do things is just simply because of geography. So it's a really important thing to understand when you're crafting story. Because that gives you the motivations. And once you have the motivation,